Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents...
I would like to speak to America's men for 1 minute.
That slacker barista.
I start getting full of emotion.
Now we're going to build this new bridge here.
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm. No, I can't.
Betches Up Podcast.
Like, how are people surviving?
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaris.
I'm Sammy Sage.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at all the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. We have such a beefy show. Sammy is back with us. But before we start anything, I think, you know, we all just want to pause to acknowledge that, you know, it just feels weird to be amused by anything within the background, what's happened in Turkey and Syria with more than 17,000 people already confirmed dead. We're exposed to a lot of tragedy in the world these days, but this is something that's just on a level that's hard to comprehend. And so just wanted to like spend a moment to acknowledge that. CNN Impact has a great list of organizations on the ground. Every dollar counts. I mean, these people, you know, it's sort of the search and rescue is ongoing, but I think people are at the point now where they're not just having to deal with like the immeasurable grief of losing members of their family, but they have, you know, nowhere to go. So definitely keep them in mind, and we'll be sharing updates in the newsletter as always.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And now for our show. So
Now to switch.
This has been a crazy news week. So much going on. We're going to start with the State of the Union. This week, President Biden delivered his second State of the Union address. As you remember, the first one he gave was like a joint address. So it's like his third big speech, but his second State of the Union. So I'm going to give some, you know, initial Cliff's notes. He sought to highlight the accomplishments. You know what I'm actually going to read? I'll be honest with you. These are the notes that the White House gave me that I summarized for the podcast.
Yeah, let's get into you it. Say, who was there? Who was there?
You mean President Biden, your friend who you met?
Yeah. I would rather spend most of our time listening to what you guys think of this day. You know, maybe we'll do a bonus on this. But yes, it was very, very cool. It was much cooler than I expected what they let us do and where they let us go. But yeah, very cool. Got to stand in front of Joe.
What do you think about? I mean, I think we all want to hear some personal anecdotes about the State of the Union. Maybe that first. But I do want to hear what the White House wants us to hear about the State of the Union.
Yeah. Exactly.
So we should
give it to us all. We want to hear everything. So I want to hear about the M&M's and popcorn. Was it M&M peanuts? Was it regular M&M's?
Yeah.
Right. Maybe I'll do an AMA on Monday if we don't get to it today.
Would love
but
that.
But tell us something today, right now.
Something today. Okay, well, Bridget specifically asked me how his Botox was, and I would say that his face looks frozen at 75. He looks great.
Okay.
But you know what I will say? You know what I will leave you with is that Elise and Millie, you will be happy to know. Elise and Millie and our audience will be relieved to know, knowing my history, that I was not attracted to President Joe Biden. I think you'll all be
relieved. I feel like, I would rather you with Joe Biden than Joe Manchin.
I'm shocked that you're not attracted to Joe Biden.
I know. And Joe Biden was hot for a long time.
He's really like thin and trim in person. That's like the difference.
That's
guy. Like
not
really
bad.
Thin ankles. No, exactly. He's thin and trim. He has like the bright eyes of somebody who never drinks.
He doesn't drink.
You can't change where you feel that electric energy. And Amanda felt it for Joe Manchin, and she didn't feel it for Joe Biden. I also will just say that I think you got the clip of the night of Jill Biden apologizing for there being no alcohol. I loved it. I love our Philly girl.
Yeah. It now has a million views.
She's not from Philly, but she's from like Pennsylvania.
No, a lot of people said like spoken like a true Philly girl.
Okay. But also Melania is not going to apologize for no alcohol. That's what I'm just going to say. Melania would never.
That's
she'd
true.
Make you bring her alcohol.
Yeah. Laura Bush. Right, that's George Bush's wife.
Definitely not Nancy Reagan.
Well, Nancy Reagan will bring some other stuff, but the other stuff I'm talking about blowjobs.
I thought you were going to say a Bible.
No, you don't know about Nancy Reagan's reputation.
I know you reminded me that she is famously. Where did we learn that? that
Twitter.
She's, I think that's a Twitter thing.
Yeah, but it was like in some book or something.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it must have been a book, and then it surfaced on Twitter. Yeah, I also there was also a viral tweet over the weekend where it was like on a game show. It was like which politician related person sexual
that
exploits
is so crazy.
Went viral.
Yeah, good
of all of them.
All right, so circling back to the talking points from the State of the Union. So President Biden sought to highlight the accomplishments of the last 2 years, not just tossing around names like the Inflation Reduction Act, but detailing the actual practical impacts of these initiatives. So the people that sort of like gave us the hype message for him were Karine Jean-Pierre, the press secretary, Anita Dunn, who's senior advisor to him and is like has basically been senior advisor to like lots of very important people. And Kate Bedingfield, who's the communications director and also the press secretary for the first lady. And they told us that the central theme was meant to be that the administration is determined to finish the job. They said this a lot. He said that a lot. He spoke about policies that Democrats are still pursuing that Republicans will not support, but they're going to double down on, just to sort of highlight that they're committed to getting the job done. And he talked about potential areas of obvious bipartisan compromise like the PACT Act and the opioid epidemic. And of course, he spoke about the murder of Tyre Nichols by police, explaining they told us that he was going to have, you know, a really personal moment on this. And I think they meant, you know, he was referring to when he never had to give any of his sons or daughters the talk. He also lauded Brendan Saith, another of the guests, for preventing a second mass shooting in Monterey Park. So those were definitely the earnest bits and some of those moments were super memorable. Especially I openly wept with the couple whose daughter survived cancer. When he was talking about them to drive, you know, attention to the moonshot effort.
Interesting. I didn't really get that as the overarching theme whatsoever. That's not how I perceived it. But I did think it was a great, really engaging State of the Union speech. It did not read like a list. It felt like it was sectioned out appropriately. It felt like it had a good mix of personal and like real personal, not like prop personal. Bringing Brandon Say, bringing Tyre Nichols' parents, he really felt like he had cultivated anecdotes and feelings of the American people and was trying to actually thread them all together. Truly props to his speechwriters, but also props to him for being able to deliver it genuinely and sharply. And I think that, you know, obviously we'll talk about the big moment of the night in a second, but I think that you know, little skirmish about Social Security and the debt ceiling actually even helped to pace the speech. So, you know, it livened it at the perfect moment. Mm-hmm. And not only did it actually accomplish something live for the American people, but it really is the answer to all the questions that will come up about his mental acuity. Mm-hmm. So I felt,
yeah,
really, really great after.
Well, let's get right into that. So as Sammy said, I think the State of the Union will be remembered as Joe Biden nimbly negotiating Republicans into a corner while we witness Kevin McCarthy watch himself once again lose control of his party. I mean, just to watch Biden deliver this and then to watch McCarthy literally have to shush them. I mean, we're going to talk about it. So let's start with that specific Medicare and Social Security exchange. We'll play it here, a trimmed version for our listeners to get refreshed.
Instead of making the wealthy pay their fair share, some Republicans want Medicare and Social Security to sunset. I'm not saying it's a majority. Let me give you, anybody who doubts it, contact my office. I'll give you a copy of the proposal. That means Congress doesn't vote. Well, I'm glad to see you. No, I tell you, I enjoy conversion. You know, it means if Congress doesn't keep the programs the way they are, they'd go away. Other Republicans say, I'm not saying it's a majority of you. I don't even think it's even a significant, but it's being proposed by individuals. I'm not politely not naming them, but it's being proposed by some of you. Look, folks, the idea is that we're not going to be moved into being threatened to default on the debt if we don't respond. Folks, so folks, as we all apparently agree, Social Security and Medicare is off the books now, right? They're not to be spoken.
This was just like, it's very hard to get people to care about Social Security and Medicare when it's not like, when they're not staring down the end of it, which they very much could be someday. And it was just like, everybody says it was a masterful moment. It was a viral moment. Elise, what was so impressive about that moment? Why do you think it hit so hard?
Well, I think, number one, I think it is really important to remember when we go into these states of the union that Joe Biden overcame a stutter to get to where he is today. It is hard to do. To give a good state of the union is hard when you have not come from that place. For him to do it, to have to be reading off the teleprompter, all of that stuff, like, we're really watching someone do something actually really impressive, even if, you know, I never feel particularly roused, I guess, by a Joe Biden speech, but he does do great giving emotional moments like you talked about. I think the cancer thing really hit home because everyone knows his personal history with loss there. What I think was really great about this kind of this exchange is like, and what impressed me is as someone who performs, and Millie, I'm sure you can talk about this too, like when you're on stage and things go south, it actually is really stressful and it is hard to keep on top of everything in the moment. That is a performance that is high pressure on a level that, like, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's not just for that room, it's for millions of people. You have a speech that you've probably given over and over again. Coming from the place that he comes from, he probably has like special vocal exercises and things that he has built into his delivery to help him with like his mm-hmm. past with the stutter and everything. So to be able to be off the cuff with those Republicans, to take in that moment and to respond in a way that was like funny, actually, and like kind of showed a level of cleverness, which again, Sammy alluded to, they're always trying to say that he's senile, that he has no, like that, yeah, all of that stuff. And it's like, what he did up there is hard. And it's hard, it's hard, extra hard for him coming from where he comes from. So that really just impressed me. I thought was really good. Yeah, and again, just pushed back on kind of all the negative narratives about him and who he is. And he got all these Republicans on record basically saying that they don't want to cut Social Security and Medicaid, which they actually fucking do want to do. So
incredible.
Yeah, I just want to like piggyback off of, you know, as a performer, when someone's heckling you, like, you have to be, it's a very thin line to like acknowledge the heckling, turn it back, but in a way that's not so negative that it makes the audience uncomfortable. So the fact that he was able to do that and like lightly be like, okay, personally, I just feel like Republicans have no fucking shame. So even though people are like, oh, now he backed on the corner, they're on record. Kevin McCarthy's on record losing 15 times. Like, these people have no shame. They have no dignity. They don't care. They're still going to try. Again, yeah. Look at Marjorie Taylor Greene's freaking coat. Like, she doesn't care about looking stupid at all.
But at least the voters can be like, well, then they lied.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yes. Yes. The Democratic messaging can mm-hmm. turn this around and make it strong. And I do think that it's better to call it out than nothing. But I don't feel like, yeah, like that moral corner that people are so like impressed with Biden putting. Yes, like that is important and cool and like as a performer, impressive and everything that Elise was saying. But at the same time, that is still the Washington of the past that has like really crippled Democrats in many ways of like, you're working under the assumption that Republicans care about decorum, rules, right, not having scammers, all of that, and they don't.
Not having someone who lied about every single aspect of his life literally sitting there.
Yeah, or someone who's Venmoing teen girls for stuff. Like, the rules don't, like, you have Matt Gaetz there, like, they don't care about looking stupid, you know, whatever. There's that, yeah. And, like, two other things that I was thinking about with this speech. One thing is like the Tyre Nichols like moment was so important. It's so cool and transformative to have a president that even acknowledges the talk in a time again where there are people actively trying to strip away critical race theory courses, African American studies. Like, there's a whole keynote on that yesterday in Harvard. And I almost sent you the clip, but I know I send Amanda and Elise clips at
no,
all.
No, there's no
day.
Excess of clips.
Okay, okay.
I was
watching that at 1 a.m. I'm like, let me not send this. But there are actual threats to, like, acknowledging the reality of being a Black person in America, and to have the president, like the man in the highest position of power in U.S. government, acknowledge that, like, there is a difference in all of that is transformative and amazing. That being said, to then turn around and be like, and this is why we're gonna give more money to the police. It's like, what? It's like, what the fuck? Like, okay, cool. So it's kind of like cancels out, because as we've talked about on air on Betches, like, the whole thing, you know, about the Tyre Nichols thing, of course, like, the brutal beating, all of that, but it's like, those were Black police officers. And again, it's a symptom of the system that exists. And if we're not examining the system, like, there's no reform or diversity or outreach that's gonna, you know, so to have someone be like, yes, like, I'm going to acknowledge these problems and then also give money to make it, you know, it's just kind of like, okay, that being said, someone made a point, and
that's a new segment. That being said.
It's like walking chew gum at the same time as a leftist myself, somebody brought up on Twitter, and I kind of have to agree with a million caveats. Joe Biden is probably one of the most leftist presidents. Like, the conversation, not that he's like the super left-leaning socialist that everyone says, but the conversation has moved to acknowledging the evils of capitalism, or acknowledging that people should have some kind of, you know, and like, that rich people should pay more taxes than poor people. Even to have a president acknowledge that is like one of the more progressive than Obama, more progressive, you know, and like in many ways, a lot of the things that he said at the State of the Union is bringing like, is what, like more leftist, you know, the center has moved significantly. Yeah. And that's not just because of Joe Biden, you know, Joe Biden again is like, the reason why people like him is because he's the center, you know, he's the center. He goes with the flow. He's not like hardline, like a Joe Manchin or whatever. But like, what is everyone doing? Okay, I'm going to be in the middle no matter what. He like kind of sways back, weather vane. He's a weather vane. So the weather vane has moved left, and he has moved left. And you can see that in the State of the Union.
Yeah. I think a good pivot to sort of continue analyzing this is, how did you guys sort of like interpret this in the context of him being the 2024 nominee or angling for it, Sammy?
I felt like his, why I think finish the job was not really the right word, the right frame, if that, you know, I didn't get that at all, because it doesn't feel like he's saying that he's like almost done at all. It feels like, if anything, he's sort of starting this new, because, you know, the first half of his administration was really about the pandemic and the economic recovery from the pandemic and getting back to, quote, normal. But I think now what he is focusing on is this very average Joe consumer focused agenda that feels to me largely about centering the small ways in which government can make our lives better. And that's why I think he spent so much time on the fees conversation. I thought that was a really, really interesting way to penetrate outside the Washington bubble. Because when you have someone who's like willing to get into the nitty gritty in the ways
they're not even resorts.
Oh yeah, that was really, really funny.
Not even resorts.
It worked because he is authentic. He was being himself. He actually doesn't think that average people should deal with being nickel and dimed by every company as they're taking stock buybacks. He really believes that. He genuinely seems to believe that communities need more reform, whether that's like the right thing or not, you know, whether he's putting it in the right policy, you know, specifically, that is its own question, but it does seem like he really genuinely cares. He cares about a parent losing their child. And it just, you know, he isn't, even the conversation around the Medicare, it felt like he would really have been having that privately or publicly. And I think that that's why people can, I think the appeal he's making is like, trust me, I know I'm old, get behind me because I will take care of you no matter what. And I also think it really contrasted pretty nicely, not that they did it on purpose, with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you know, American Carnage light speech, which was like a Tucker Carlson monologue, essentially.
But she delivered it with like kind of emotionless. So it was even,
well, that's her,
weirder.
That's, she's always one, her voice just stays at one level while she's saying the crazy.
Elise, did this look like a Joe Biden who still wants to be president for a while to you?
I mean, there's not a doubt that he's running again. I think, you know, going back to the conversation we had before, I think he did all of the things that we talked about in just appearing as a normal man, like, seeming like, hey, if you stick with me, like, maybe you're not going to, I'm actually not going to rock the boat in some crazy way. I have these moderate popular proposals for you, proposals that most Americans do agree with, you know, because as a progressive, what I feel like negatively about in the speech as a progressive is kind of similar to what Millie's saying, is that he'll bring up issues that I really am like, this is a huge issue, but then propose what I find to be kind of like a milquetoast, lukewarm response when we're talking about Medicare, Medicaid, prescription drug prices. For me, anything short of universal healthcare, I'm just like, well, you're not really getting to the point. But what Joe Biden needs to do to be reelected is say, hi, I'm still a normal man. I actually am not senile. I actually pretty much have very moderate and chill proposals. And if you stick with me, we can actually start getting to some issues that like were never at the forefront before. I think that honing in on the junk fees thing was really smart because that, who the fuck doesn't know what he's talking about when he talks about that? It's actually really annoying. Hidden fees, all the stuff that you think you're getting one price and then at the end it's actually $150 more expensive than what you thought.
Airbnb.
All that stuff. Yeah. That's like really squarely just directed at like everyone. Everyone can agree with that, but particularly it's shown that these kinds of like fees affect the poor way more. So I think that kind of hidden in that message is like, if you stick with me, we can start doing all these other interesting things and making all these other improvements rather than going to crazy town with all of these people who are screaming and yelling, which I'm sure like they've screamed and yelled before. So he was probably prepared at least on some level to be heckled by them. It's just kind of when and how it would happen. But like it is kind of a way for him, especially knowing that Sarah Huckabee Sanders is coming up next and she's going to do this Tucker Carlson routine. It's like, okay, you can have a president who's actually going to try to improve your life in this really like small but also significant way, or you can have a president who's going to be yelling about bathrooms and, M&Ms. You know, M&Ms and whatever the fuck, all this other stuff that actually a very small percentage of the population cares about or would be impacted by in any way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you were talking, I was realizing that sort of the junk fees was kind of like, kind of built into that sort of is like, I can't control the eggs, but let's get the junk. Let's take care of the junk fees. Like, this is a totally different, like, don't focus on the eggs. This is a thing that could make a meaningful difference. I mean, like you said, he did speak to positions that most Americans agree with. And that was clearly the point, to really speak to the people that are maybe swing voters or in the middle. And I think that's why a lot of people were fairly disappointed on the abortion part. I definitely have a lot of cognitive dissonance about the speech from that in that respect. It was a triumphant night. It was an amazing speech in a memorable State of the Union. But abortion got about four sentences, about 30 seconds. He said it twice in the context of, you know, before the word ban. And it's just, you know, women are being hospitalized, you know, it just feels like it's hard for me to really understand. I used to be more sympathetic to the argument that it's just not politically worth it to talk about this that much, but it has already cost us the biggest price, which was Roe being overturned. And I don't know. I just don't know what it would have cost him to spend a little bit more time talking about, like, I think in Jill Biden's box was the woman, her first name's Amanda, I don't know her last name, who was hospitalized in Texas and nearly died as a result of not being able to access the reproductive care. Why not reference her? Why not add one more sentence referencing her?
That was very strange to me to invite her and not reference her when, he wasn't like, hey, Bono.
There's 26 people in there, so it's a lot of them.
Yeah, but he referenced, like, for each segment, it seemed like he had a person that he referenced if that was there.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like a glaring omission.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know. I do feel like that there is maybe a fundamental level on which Joe Biden, even though he does support abortion rights and all, and that I think that maybe he doesn't fully get it. Because for it to not appear in a major way, a right has never been overturned. So just on that basic level. Mm-hmm.
That half the population relies on.
Yeah, that is something pretty intense that occurred since the last State of the Union that I think deserves a little bit more time.
He really only needed to give it 90 more seconds for it to have made the dent that it needed to make. That was actually what I was most disappointed in, because he could have had sort of the equivalent, like, the talk moment for abortion. Like, because it's not just about, like, people who want to get abortions. It's a huge threat to female reproductive health care. And also, do men want their wives to be, and their future children to be, like, dying? I don't, you know, so it really is a bigger issue than I think he made it. I agree with you that where the political expedience argument used to be, that's no longer there. And so that's why I don't understand why he didn't just give it like 90 more seconds. Yeah. And the speech would have just been like 100%.
Yeah. You don't even need to say like the lack of abortion rights is killing people. Say like women are being denied, women are being denied reproductive care, and it is resulting in seriously negative health incomes because of the Supreme Court. That's it.
Right.
I remember we had an interview with my friend who's the director of communications at Sister Song, the women of color reproductive health organization, and they have a huge abortion fund. And she mentioned a lot of like Kamala partnering with their organization. So I wonder, as we're talking about this, I wonder if it's part of that White House strategy of centering Kamala or putting Kamala instead of Joe speaking about that. Because, I do agree with y'all. Like, maybe he just doesn't get it. It is an important thing that was glaringly that was a big missing thing. I wonder, like, you know, and I hope that is the angle that they're doing as we're talking about this of, like, maybe they're reserving all of that for Kamala, but it's just like, I don't know. I agree with y'all. It's like,
exactly,
and it kind of just feels like Kamala's like in this impossible position where like she's supposed to play second fiddle and then this and that, but then everyone's like, well, what is she doing? And then all this stuff.
Yeah, there's a viral thread over the week, and I definitely want to talk about it on one of our shows, just sort of being like, here's everything she's done. And it's just interesting because at first I was like, is she just not doing buzzy things? But they are giving her buzzy things, but it's not. There's a
confluence of problems.
Exactly. That's a nice way to put it. Yeah.
What is happening there?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So, okay, we've covered the substance of the speech. Now let's, Sammy's going to stay just a little bit longer for this segment because I just want to discuss some of the scenery. It was just rich. It was really giving. It felt like an award show. It's just like, there's just so, so much. We have Bernie Sanders, the only person wearing a mask in a room with at least 600 to 800 senior citizens.
Right? Because I was like, Bernie's old.
Designated survivor.
I'm like, they're all old.
They're all
there's 535 lawmakers, and they all get
one clap for is seniors. When Biden's talking about taking care of seniors, they're all on their feet clapping. It's like, you are all so goddamn selfish. It's just kind of
because your nice healthcare that replaced your knees get on your feet. We also have First Lady Jill Biden planning one on Doug Emhoff. I think we really want some more, I think, analysis and deconstructing of this, if that was just something they do or it was like a cheek miss. But there was a lot of chatter
about. Is that like a boomer thing to kiss your acquaintances on the lips?
Something weird. There's some weird generational situation where I think boomers find it slightly more acceptable to just kiss an acquaintance on the lips, but it was
weird. I agree
weird.
With you. That's the only explanation I can offer.
Cheek miss.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a cheek miss until I saw the video. It and the video.
Oh, well, maybe it's a kiss of death, but also, I'm kidding.
It's almost like, looks like what Elise said, but, you know, like slightly off to the side to make it a little less.
But it seemed intimate. Like how boomers kiss each other. Yes, like, you yes, know, you've yes. seen them do that, right?
I just feel like we have to be acceptable and open to polyamorous people in the White House. Joe Biden is really giving us the representation.
Leftist
not us as in
Joe
me.
Biden.
Actually, that's probably the most Republican thing about me is that I'm not interested in a polyamorous relationship. But there are many people who are, and we got to respect those lifestyles. And if the first lady and first man,
second gentleman
want to switch it up, you know, if they want to leave keys when you walk in the State of the Union, you have keys and you switch it up and all that. Hey. What is it? Maybe that's what Madison Cawthorn is talking about. Maybe. The sex parties and coke.
Yeah, he didn't specify which. Mm-hmm. He did not specify which.
I'm going to start referring to Biden, Kamala, Doug, and Jill as a polycule.
Yeah, we should.
I think they should campaign that way, polycule. Honestly, to actually get the leftists in 2024.
The first polycule. That's good.
On to another couple. That is some interesting things happening. Video footage also showed Congressman George Santos greeting Senator Romney and the crowd. And we see Romney respond. We don't see what he says, but it's clearly an admonishment. Reporters asked Senator Romney what he told Santos, and here is that clip.
I don't know the exact words I said. He shouldn't have been there. He shouldn't be in the it, look, he's a sick puppy. He shouldn't be there.
So can you repeat that? What did he say to you?
I don't know.
He said he's a sick puppy?
What do you mean? No, I didn't say that to him, Dad.
You just said he don't belong here.
Yeah.
Why did you want to say that to him? I didn't expect that he'd be standing there trying to shake hands with every senator in the President of the United States. Given the fact that he's under ethics investigation, he should be sitting in the back row and staying quiet instead of parading in front of the President and people coming into the room.
He says he
embellished his record. Look, embellishing is saying you got an A when you got an A minus. Lying is saying you graduated from a college you didn't even attend, and he shouldn't be in Congress. And they're going to go through the process and hopefully get him out. But he shouldn't be there. And if he had any shame at all, he wouldn't be there.
Why did you make a point to say that, though? I mean, it was kind of out of your way to say
he was standing
that.
Right there in the aisle, shaking hands with everybody.
Did he respond to you?
He may have. I didn't hear anything he said.
Are you disappointed that Kevin McCarthy has not called on him to resign?
Yes.
The eminently reasonable Mitt Romney.
Yeah, I'm like, I know. I mean, he's someone finally fucking said it. God
I
damn.
Love when he goes off like this. According to George Santos, though, this is very un-Mormon of him.
That's not true. Mormons are allowed to be mad at you.
Yeah. When I posted that, our Mormon followers, which is not a phrase I use very often, but we have a contingent. They were like, yeah, no, this is fine.
But yeah, also, yeah, like, obviously. Mormons, I'm sorry. I would say Mormons stick to the rules. These motherfuckers don't even drink coffee. Of course they're not going to like someone who lied.
That's what's so funny about Mitt Romney's comment, which is that you see that he's clearly coming from like a completely different moral frame than George Santos, where George Santos would ever suddenly be like, yeah, I better go sit in the back because I lied about everything. Like as if he was going to suddenly stop doubling down right in that moment instead of making the whole State of the Union about him if he possibly could. He has no choice but to double down. Where else will he get money? Where else will he get – I mean, there are still people associating with him. I don't know what's up with them. But like
– yeah.
This is the most powerful place he can be, and I would not be surprised if he is trying to run in 2024 for his seat again. So –
He's going to run for Senate.
For sure.
That he won't be able to do. But
true.
But he'll try.
He'll try.
But, again, I'm not surprised. I loved when he said, embellishing is getting an A minus and saying you got an A. He's lying. He didn't even go to the college. It's like, well,
among other things.
Yeah, it's like, well, is it embellishing to say you have 3 properties and get evicted from 5? I don't know.
And you live with your sister, like on your sister's couch. Your mom died twice.
Yeah. The other thing about George Santos' response to this is he was like, you know what? It's not the first time that I've been told by a privileged person to go to the back of the room, and I'm sure it won't be the last. And it's like, then you're a Democrat, bro. Like,
he is.
He doesn't even know what he's saying.
I love it. No, he does. He knows
exactly what he's doing. That's why he's at the front. That's why he's at the front.
And honestly, it looks like he got filler last week, 72 hours ago.
There is a lot of injectables going on in that face. Uh-huh. Yeah. I would love to see some, like when the plastic surgeons will be like, oh, yes, we think that like such and such got a boob lift. Like, I would love to see someone analyze George Santos's injectables routine.
Well, Mitt's like, if he had any shame in it, it's like, Mitt, you don't know any clout chasers? Like, I'm surprised. Like, you're a Republican.
You're sitting next to Kristen Sinema.
Yeah, it's like, she doesn't have any shame either. You saw her outfit again, and we're fucking talking about it. Mm-hmm. What the fuck was those sleeves? That high yellow, highlighter yellow-ass dress in February. Which, whatever, right? We're past colors in a certain time, whatever. But it's also like, you can't talk about how you're disappointed in a clown chaser and dress up in a group costume as Ted Lasso and fucking the British lady for Halloween with Kirsten Sinema. I'm sorry, Mitt, it don't work like that.
Exactly. And that is precisely why, even when we agree with Mitt, he's coming from a different place than we are.
We're saying that about Mitt Romney, but he's the most reasonable Republican in the Senate. So if he's the one hanging out with shameless Kirsten Sinema, he must see some level of plausible deniability in this situation. Mm-hmm. And that, but in reality, Kirsten Sinema crawled so George Santos could sprint.
I don't know. I'm just like,
George Santos says he has a gold medal. And
he's actually an Olympic medalist. Yeah. Kirsten Sinema sold her biking shoes on Marketplace so that George Santos will sell Splash Mountain water.
Oh,
on eBay. No, I'm just like, I don't know. Most rational Republican is not the credit that I would like. That's not the impressive thing. You know, it's like,
that's why
I just like that he had the decorum not to call him a sick puppy to his face. That wraps up our State of the Union segment. Thank you, Sammy. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you. Before we move on, what was Trump doing during the State of the Union?
Oh.
He was accusing Ron DeSantis of being a pedophile during Tuesday's address. Trump posted on Truth Social a photo that people say shows Florida governor and 2024 hopeful looking to be. I mean, he is partying with high school students at the private school.
He's not wrong.
Exactly. In today's edition of Does Trump Have a Point? So the image has meme text on it saying DeSantis groomed high school girls with alcohol as a teacher, and then adding his own commentary on Truth Social. Trump wrote, "No way. That's not Ron, is it? He would never do such a thing." So the picture is a young Ron DeSantis with 3 young women with their faces burnt out. So again, does Donald Trump have a point? This is the segment we're doing today. So Sammy, there's so much with Ron DeSantis' background, and Sammy goes really deep into it on a recent extra episode. So subscribe to that if you haven't used your free trial yet. This is definitely the time to do it. But in terms of this particular claim. So Ron DeSantis worked as a history teacher after he graduated from Yale. He was 23 at the time, and it was at a private boarding school or day school called Darlington School in Georgia. And he was remembered by students as, quote, cocky and arrogant. As for the parties, students say that he was a frequent presence at parties with seniors. And one of the students quoted said she found it bizarre that he would socialize with 18-year-olds. But yes, he was apparently there.
He was that teacher. I feel like every high school has that one fucking weird, creepy teacher who is a little too involved in the social lives of the kids. And Ron DeSantis was that teacher at that school, it seems.
And the fact that it's a boarding school, it's like they probably were all like partying on campus, and like he would go into the dorms and party with these kids. Like, ugh.
It's
and
so like, gross.
And again, like, if he wasn't so, it's wrong for anyone to do, but especially from someone, first of all, that he taught history and is so anti-CRT, all that shit, and like trying to like edit textbooks, it's like, you're an asshole. But it's like, you're so, like, everything about him is like, trans people are grooming, blah, blah, blah. It's like, bro, you're drinking, like, first of all, what are 17 and 18 year old kids actually drinking anyway? Like, you know that alcohol has to be nasty.
Yeah. It's, oh, God. I mean, my friends and I would like drink like fucking Everclear. It was crazy.
Yeah. Pinnacle vodka, also, like whipped cream Pinnacle vodka.
Yeah.
Like
some, yes. Like, yeah. Vanilla brunettes or whatever. Oh my God.
Wait,
yes.
Did you used to ask on the Roastalies what was like your first drink?
I've asked. I think I maybe it just came times, up.
Because yes, I remember you asking that, and my answer was a screwdriver, and you were like, "Wow,
yeah,
yeah, that is pretty sophisticated."
But I didn't know it was a screwdriver at the time. It was just orange juice and vodka. But anyway, where were we? I also have included a picture of Ron DeSantis here. Some other notes, some quotes from the students that I'm reading from the New York Times article are that he was a total jock. That was his personality. He was definitely proud that he graduated in Ivy and thought he was very special. He was one of the cooler guys. He thought that he had a mystique about him and he was very smart. And he would also fight with students about the Civil War. He was one of those. It's not about slavery. It was about, you know, the South being able to keep their businesses.
Yeah. Every school has one teacher that parties with the students. Every school has one teacher that fights with them about the Civil War for some reason.
But this was a small school.
Ron DeSantis was both. He served in both positions at this school.
Terrible.
He also cut his own bangs.
How are you a jock? You're a teacher.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Why are you in the social order of jock versus not jock? Like, you shouldn't be involved in that.
He probably, like, hung out with the jocks. God, this is so lame. Also, like, again, like, it's wrong and it's terrible, but it's also like, I had one of those teachers too, and he was conservative. And I just, at the moment, like when I was in high school, it was like weird for me to like, I hated him, but I didn't understand why. And now as a fully grown adult who's like still 15 younger than he was at the time, I'm just like, it's so pathetic and lame to argue with literal children, teenagers whose minds aren't developing, about topics and art, like debate them when you're supposed to be teaching them. You're not supposed to be. And, you know, again, this conservative teacher, you know, I just thought it was insanely sick.
They said he played pranks on students, too. Like,
what a loser.
Like, made one of them drink a gallon of milk.
Like, he's a loser. Like, this is loser behavior. Like, hang out with people your own age.
I mean, it's just, it's literally, it's punching down.
Argue with other people who went to fucking Yale with you, dude. Like,
your own age.
Argue with your liberal, like, classmate at Yale. Don't show up in a history class where kids literally have not fully learned all of the history yet. That's why they're in fucking class. And start yelling at them, probably using, like, Yale-level discourse. And yeah, of course you're gonna make a 15 year old look foolish, even if they're actually right, because they're not Ivy League educated teacher at the school. They're still learning at the school.
And as you were talking about that, like, I you guys probably had teachers that did this, like, it's, and our listeners probably did too, like, that dings your confidence.
It does.
And you need years of therapy. Like, I don't think I am still over teachers that undermined me, that in ways I know now were unfair and gave me like bad, you know, like to have an authority do that to you in front of your peers, especially young women. Like, one of the people quoted here was a young Black woman who said that she felt like he was hostile towards her, especially in these conversations about
he
like
probably
history.
Is. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Like, of course he was. Of course. She's like, I was a Black woman. And it's just like sick. It's like, it's a sick instinct to want to do that to people younger than you, to teenagers.
And especially, again, like, the, like, it's, It's probably so validating that, like, that Black woman has grown up and seen Ron DeSantis, like, take the positions and the things that he does. It's like, oh, it wasn't just because I, whatever. It's because he's a terrible person. But it's also like, yeah, I mean, again, my high school was majority Black and Latino. And to have a white, older, conservative man, like, talk to us and, like, yell at us about climate change and, like, argue with us, it's just like, again, like, so demoralizing. It makes you feel stupid. It's like, well, maybe I should, you know. And it is like a way to indoctrinate people, and it's so lame. And probably people who are his peers, because I have people all the time, and even online we all encounter those crazy people who, like, every time we post a video on Betches about something, they're like, okay, now do it about Joe Biden. It's like, even people our age who are like this kind of antagonistic thing, when you're like, Elise, why doesn't he argue with people who at Yale, like liberal people? These people probably know not to engage Ron DeSantis because it's a waste of their time, and he does everything in bad faith, and that's not a good use. So instead, like, he imposes and forces himself. By process
of elimination, yeah. He just, you know, the only ones there.
In a 15-year-old who has, like, still, like, gathering their worldviews and has nothing else, so... Donald Trump does have a point, guys.
Donald Trump does have a point.
One thing I do want to say before we move on from this is that I do just think, and I said this to you guys in our group chat, that it is so funny that these two are not even officially running against each other yet, and Donald Trump is already at, you are a pedophile.
Who's grooming who?
Where the fuck are we going to be?
I'm excited.
When this crime, like, what could I'm excited. We possibly?
Millie is grinning ear to ear.
I'm so excited.
Like, where do we have, like, what depths will we sink to by the time these two men are actually running against each other? Because Ron DeSantis responded to this kind of and was just like, I don't spend my time attacking Republicans. And it's like, number one, that's lame. Not going to fucking cut it.
Hell no.
That is not going to cut it. He called you a pedophile, not a friend. No, number two, that only works when he's not literally in a primary. As soon as he declares, then actually your job for the next 6 months is to attack other Republicans. So, I mean, it still remains to be seen how Ron DeSantis is actually going to handle this stuff. I also, if I was Ron DeSantis, I'd be like, you were on Jeffrey Epstein's plane.
Yeah, yeah. But he's not going to go there.
No,
and this
won't.
Is the thing. This is the thing. And
that would
this
be amazing
so
if they
excited.
Did, though, if they just each other set it up perfectly for Democrats to win. Like, we don't even
spy.
Have to accuse anyone of grooming. They're
exactly.
already doing it.
Like, this is why I'm so excited. Because let me tell you something.
Is Ron DeSantis a double agent?
Well,
he's
sometimes.
An agent of chaos only.
He's an agent of chaos. But I'm like, Donald Trump. Terrible human being, terrible father, amazing poster. He's so good at this. He's so good at the memes. He's so good online. He's incredible. He's an incredible poster. So this is where he shines.
He's a content
and
creator.
Content creator. And, like, the stupid, first of all, like, the antiquated meme fuck from 2012. Yes. The, like,
amazing.
Why would he ever do that? Like, incredible. I'm just never going to fucking forget the Elon Musk. The Elon Musk read where it's like, I could have told you to get on your knees. I'm obsessed. So this is what I want. This is exactly what I want from a Republican primary. Ron DeSantis don't got it. Again, he's like, I don't spend my time attacking Republicans. Yeah, you spend your time attacking children. Yeah, good for fucking you. Mm-hmm. No, again, if we're starting off with pedophile.
We're starting with pedophile. It's giving like pedophile. Table flip first season of New Jersey Housewives.
And that is going to be the
and
energy.
People ended up in jail. So
I've been talking about this. I was just talking about this with a friend over the weekend. I do think DeSantis can beat Trump in the primary. But he will come out wounded in ways that we cannot imagine. And this meme that Donald Trump posted is just the beginning of whatever wild ride we are standing in line for right now. Soon we will be led into our seats. We will be clipped in and the roller coaster will begin.
Yeah, that's what I say a lot. Like, you know, there's some guys, you know, I'm a pretty big woman and all this stuff. And like, there's some guys I'm like, you probably can harm me, but you will come out harmed yourself. You will come out fucked up. I'm not going to win this fight, but you will have damage.
My favorite stand-up joke of yours, the one that always that is when you say, when you talk about getting on top.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Well, I was aware of that. But yeah, exactly. Time. But yeah, Brondus and again.
Anyway,
Brondus. No. I'm going to circle back, but it's just like Elise said, Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis can be Donald Trump, but it's just going to set it up so much. We're going to have so much terrible material about Ron DeSantis that Joe Biden is literally going to be like putt-putt golf right there. Knock it in putt-putt. With the most mildest milquetoast shit that Joe Biden will do. It sets itself up. I think it's going
to
be
holding a toddler up to the hoop. I mean, you know, I don't even think we need to do our men okay today. I think we'll save it for next week because I think we have our answer after pretty much everything. Joe Biden is okay. The rest of his gender, struggling.
Yeah. I think Mitt Romney this week is okay.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I was going to pose him because I was kind of like, does he have something going on at home? But I think this is just a genuine moral outrage.
Mitt Romney, what you have to understand about Mitt Romney is that Mitt Romney is the guy at the end of the day on the Friday before Christmas break who's like, teacher, you forgot to give us our homework. That's Mitt Romney. And George Santos is the one who stole everyone.
He changes the clocks. He's the one changing the clock to 2:15 on the last day of school.
Yeah, but then everyone has to suffer because of George's dumb thing. No, true. He's the one that ruins the pizza party for everybody because he won't shut up. And as someone who's been there, that's George Santos. So to have those two, I'm excited for the Republicans. I love when they make asses of themselves.
Yeah, it's been a rich text of a week. Thank you for coming along with us. That is our show. Until the end of democracy, for Elise Morales, Millie Tamaris, and Sammy Sage, this is the Betches Up Podcast, and I'm Amanda Duberman. Bye. The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com. Betches.